Well, ladies and gentlemen, after possibly the most wonderful introduction I ever had in my career, I think I should say thank you for having had me. But even at the risk of disappointing you, I'm going to speak. First of all, let me say how pleased I am and what a very great honor it is to speak to a group that comes together not merely for the usual purposes of professionalism, of trying to find out what the other man knows or doesn't know, or for entertainment only, but for a common spiritual gathering, for a meeting of personalities, of spirits, and of intellects. And I hope that it is in this spirit that we can try to explore together some of the new findings, the new insights that are won today in the sciences. I was very much struck yesterday and very deeply gratified by Madame Rabbani's remark about the importance placed on the independent investigation of scientific insight, scientific knowledge. I was in a position, and I'm still in a position, where I am carrying out such independent investigation, and I find that this investigation is paralleled in some sense by the faith that you all share, and which to me is so very attractive and so very valid. So without further remarks and further preliminaries, let me read to you primarily, because I understand there are some French-speaking friends here. Je vous salue, des amis français, de l'expression française, mais je peux parler qu'une langue à la fois, donc je vais parler anglais. But these French-speaking friends of ours who are getting interpretations, so I shall remain with the text that's prepared, and which perhaps, if you like, may also be available afterwards. But I cannot prevent myself, not resist the temptation to make some remarks every once in a while about things that I've heard, things that I've learned, even just in these little over 24 hours since I have participated in this meeting. First of all, let me start with a quotation from Shoghi Effendi. I was so very pleased yesterday that Madame Rabbani emphasized some of those same quotations that struck me. Of course, she knows them all, and I only know a few, but it was a great confirmation to me that at least the ones that I happen to know and that I chose are also important to her. The first one is this, and I quote, "The Baha'i faith teaches that the fundamental purpose of religion is to promote concord and harmony, that it must go hand in hand with science, and that it constitutes the sole and ultimate basis of a peaceful and ordered and progressive society. The path to peace in contemporary society is not just one of the many quests of humankind, but the basic and the ultimate quest. Without it, no other goals can be achieved, no other purposes can be pursued. Human survival is at stake, the continuation of the remarkable adventure of life and consciousness that is embodied in our species. This quest is of more than local significance. Surely it matters for the entire universe, for whatever spirit or intelligence that we call by the name of God is at work, that a species that has gained knowledge of itself, and some, although perhaps still rudimentary, but already significant knowledge of the nature of the cosmos, that such a species should survive and achieve a higher, a more perfect understanding both of itself and of the world. In humankind, the world comes to know itself, and if humankind vanishes, the world itself becomes poorer, less able to reflect the force, the spirit, or the intelligence that underlies its complex and harmonious processes. The path to peace can only be tread through understanding. peace doesn't come about by accident. The cards are too stacked against it in a world that is complex and full of short-sighted practices and selfish interests. Understanding, however, can be gained in different ways. One of the ways is through insight and intuition. The other, through reasoning and experimentation. The former is the domain of religion, the latter of science. The way through insight and intuition is unfettered by considerations of method and application of preconceived rules. It moves above the clouds and views the vastest vistas. Its strong point is depth and perspective, but perhaps its weak point is dependence on personal insight, on personal revelation. The way through reasoning and experimentation moves close to the ground. It looks only before the feet and tests the ground before placing foot on it. Its weakness is reduced horizons and the possible loss of perspective. Its advantage is the certitude conveyed by repeatable tests and by observations. The path to peace, then, is through understanding. And the way of understanding takes us either through the high road of prophecy or the low road of science. But does this choice create a problem? I fully agree with Madame Rabbani, who said yesterday it does not create a problem. These two roads come together in the Baha'i faith and in contemporary science. This is the ideal case in which the two roads lead to the same destination, when science and religion go hand in hand. In this case, the prophecy is true and the science is valid. And together, they offer perspective with insight, detailed specification with applicable information, wisdom with knowledge. Going hand in hand, science and religion can be, in the words of Shoghi Effendi, the ultimate basis of a peaceful and ordered and a progressive society. Now, the notes that follow give some indications that this indeed may be the actual case in the instance presented by the Baha'i writings and by some fields of contemporary science. If the harmony between the spiritual and intellectual fountainheads could be demonstrated, religious faith would be bolstered by scientific knowledge, and the two together would shine brightly as the torches that light humankind's path to peace. The method I have chosen for my presentation this morning to tackle this vast and challenging task is simple and perhaps inadequate, but it is to the point. It is to take a passage, one of the few passages that I'm familiar with, that seems to me particularly relevant and meaningful from the basic writings of the Baha'i faith, and to place it alongside some of the conclusions that emerge from the study of the theories of the pertinent new sciences. Clearly, neither can I cover all the passages that are particularly relevant and meaningful in the Baha'i writings, nor can I cover all the theories and findings of the contemporary sciences. But perhaps I can demonstrate the feasibility of tackling this task, and perhaps I can encourage others who are more qualified than I to bring this to completion. Let me then begin by quoting some of these remarkably insightful prophetic passages from the Baha'i writings, and then tell you what I think of them in the light of the contemporary scientific knowledge systems. First, these are all well-known quotes, a quote from Baha'u'llah. The well-being of mankind, its peace and security are unattainable unless and until its unity is firmly established. A further quote on this from Shoghi Effendi. His cause stands identified with and revolves around the principle of the organic unity of mankind as representing the consummation of the whole process of human evolution. And immediately following this, I would like to add another quote from Baha'u'llah as follows. the winds of despair are, alas, blowing from every direction, and the strife that divides and afflicts the human race is daily increasing. The signs of impending convulsions and chaos can now be discerned, inasmuch as the prevailing order appears to be lamentably defective. Now, these citations, to my mind, together convey one single and basic truth. The truth that peace and well-being are impossible without unity, and that the attainment of unity takes us, alas, through despair, strife, convulsions, and chaos. This prophetic insight is remarkable in that it perceives disunity as a prelude to, and not as a contradiction or negation of, unity. It's remarkable also in that it views humankind's path on this planet as a process of evolution toward a mature, fully evolved condition. These insights were known to Baha'u'llah a century and a half ago. They were not known to science until a few years ago. That they are now known to the followers of the Baha'i faith, as well as to the international scientific avant-garde, gives us cause for hope as we look around us and see the winds of despair blowing from every direction. We can now find more and more reasons to be assured that these are not winds of dissolution, decadence, and devolution, but winds that herald a new synthesis, a new creativity, a new and decisive step in evolution. A step that, in the words of Shoghi Effendi, marks the highest stage in the stupendous evolution of man's collective life on this planet. Let me come now to these, what I already mentioned, independently investigated scientific knowledge systems. And I ask you to bear with me for a little while as I go through some of these, perhaps at first sight, somewhat difficult theories, but I'll try to make them understandable. Because they're very important, I think very important for you and for all people, but for you especially, who have the same convictions already, and you'll find that it's confirmed by the sciences. Must keep in mind that science always proceeds in different stages. There's a so-called normal stage when scientists are very cautious and they experiment and they try to prove theories. And then every once in a while, there happen to be revolutions in science, a complete transformations of the basic assumptions. And alternative theories, new conceptions come about. Some fields of contemporary sciences have been in such a state of revolution for at least the past decade. New theories have emerged, and classical conceptions have collapsed. The most remarkable among these new fields are those that deal with the emergence of complexity in nature and in the human world. These fields have originated with general system theory, which was pioneered by Ludwig von Bertalanffy, Paul Weiss, Rapoport, Kenneth Boulding, and a few others whom you may know. They progressed with the science of cybernetics, developed by Norbert Wiener and others. In the 1960s, they were reinforced by the work of Aharon Kachalsky, Ilya Prigozhin, who got the Nobel Prize for it in the 1970s, and their followers by John von Neumann, and other people who today, in these new fields which span physics, biology, the social realm, and even mathematics, who develop this field in a way that does not fit into any classical disciplinary compartments. They deal with complexity. They deal with how complex systems evolve, how they interact, how they exist in this dynamic world. These new fields show that complexity, more precisely complex dynamic systems, such as particles, cells, atoms, molecules, organisms, ecologies, societies, and so on, how these emerge in a constant and yet discontinuous process that is creative and which is far from predetermined. Unlike the traditional sciences that viewed evolution as a deterministic process, it is oriented toward a state of equilibrium, which underemphasized chance and instability in favor of stability, control, predictability. These new sciences do not formulate laws that would uniquely determine the way evolution unfolds. The newly conceived laws state ensembles, whole groups of possibilities within which evolution can find its own way. As Ilya Prigozhin points out, these dynamic complex systems have what he calls a divergence property. What is this? It means that if you start from the same initial conditions, from the same basic point, for two systems which are exactly the same at that time, and you allow them to develop, to evolve, one will go in one way, the other might evolve in a different way. The way they evolve, of course, is not chaotic, not totally free, not totally anarchic. There are some laws within which all these systems must exist. These are the possibilities, the constraints given in the universe. But these are very broad, very generous possibilities. And within these possibilities, each system chooses its own path of evolution. As it chooses its next evolutionary stage, fresh opportunities, fresh possibilities become available. Thus, in this new perspective, evolution is creative. Its past is always logical, and it's always comprehensible. If you look backwards, we can always understand why a system has evolved the way it did. But its future is open. Its future is open to choice. So the past of a system is part of its present, but its future is not. Its future arises from its present on the basis of a creative choice that incorporates these general laws, but allows freedom, allows creativity. Evolution has a general direction and also has a dominant dynamic, a way of progressing in that direction. So let me illustrate this very general statement in regard to some more specific, more concrete data. Let's look at the levels of evolution on Earth. You heard a great deal yesterday about how reality, nature, operates on different levels. I myself would not like to put any value judgment to these levels. To me, an atom or an amoeba or a plankton in the sea is a very good system, is a very stable system. To me, I don't see myself being a better one than the amoeba. We are operating, however, on different levels of evolution. And these are levels which we can organize in, perhaps, in three large categories. And perhaps I'd like to get the first slide at this point. These three categories make up the material systems in the universe, the living systems, and the social, human systems. Hopefully you can make these out. The lines, these horizontal lines, are simply meant to indicate many, many different levels of organization in which these systems that emerge in the course of time in the universe exist. The lowest level is the realm of matter. Nancy Ward last night sang beautifully about the three levels. She didn't know it, but the lowest level is dirt. The next one are plants and animals, and then come people. Of course, people live in societies, so the highest level is the socio-cultural level of communities of human beings. So evolution moves on the whole from the lower to the higher levels, but it does not leave the lower levels empty. Obviously, the universe is full of atoms, full of particles, full of molecules. We even know